Dear Sugar is supported by
The universe has good news for the lost, lonely, and heartsick. Sugar is here, the both of us, speaking straight into your ears. I'm Cheryl Strayed.
I'm Steve Almond. This is Dear Sugar Radio.
Oh, dear song, won't you please share some bittersweet days with me? Check my mailbox every day for any sugar you send my way.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Cheryl.
It's part two of our series on family secrets. Mm-hmm. This week, we're going to talk about discovering a secret. And I was curious about learning more about your brother. You mentioned you discovered a secret from your twin brother.
Yeah, he came out. And I think the sort of narrative in people's heads, or even when I say that, I sort of see a family gathering and the announcement is made and then there's a new understanding and order in the family. That is not the way that it worked in my family. And I don't think actually in most families, when a secret is revealed, it's tentative. It's, you know, to individuals oftentimes and, you know, strategically deciding who gets to know when. With my brother, it's very striking. Even the manner in which he came out to me was in a certain way, not veiled exactly, but it was obscured. And I'll tell you, I can remember quite vividly that we were driving up to Berkeley to see REM. So this is back in 1985 or 1986. And it's worth mentioning because coming out was a bigger deal.
Yeah.
And the way that he told me that he was gay wasn't to say, Steve, I have something important I want to tell you. It was to use the pronoun he to mention his boyfriend and to say, you know, he. And that was it.
Well, and I'm curious then, you also were rather silent about it, right? When he said he, you didn't say, wait a minute.
Dude, I was totally silent.
What do you
silent.
Mean by that? Are you gay?
Right.
You didn't say that, right?
No way. I had a little internal earthquake that went, ugh. Like, you know, you think it's one way,
uh-huh.
And then suddenly you realize it's the other way.
You know, one of the things I'm intrigued about, you know, when your brother came out to you, what he was doing was telling you his secret. Did you feel like the keeper of that secret? Or, you know, did you feel like you should tell your parents or your other brother? How did that secret travel through your family?
You know, that's a great question. And the sad truth is, I don't know. I mean, that's pathetic, but I really don't know. I've never reconstructed it. I don't know that I ever said even to my parents, you know, Mike told me.
And nor did he sit your whole family down and say, there's something I want to announce to all of you.
Yeah.
And it wasn't out in the open. It was just suddenly, someday after some time, it was just an open secret, what they call an open secret, where
yeah.
you all know what it is. You've never really discussed it. And there it is. And onward you go.
Yeah, basically. And again, I don't know. And I feel bad for not knowing because it's my own cowardice, basically, that I didn't say to him in a more compassionate, forthright way, what does that mean? And are you okay? And what was it like being in our family, and which was so competitive and so sort of hetero, you know, not just heteronormative, like macho. I never said those things to him. And to some extent, I think it was because I picked up on the fact that I wasn't allowed to ask those questions. It was enough that he had told me and I shouldn't press the point.
It's a fascinating way
to
reveal a truth. And I'm really fascinated by your response, which was to essentially tuck it right in there and keep a secret.
Well, I don't want to say that I felt I was keeping the secret. What I felt was that it was as if the revelation itself was kind of held within all of us, and we didn't have, this is what I mean about, it's not that moment where the family sits down and there's a new order.
Yeah.
It was like each of us got it. It was kind of being protected, you know, by each of us. And we each had our own responses, which was mostly silence, which was mostly a set of ellipses.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not proud to say any of that because I think that it spoke to our bigotry, Mike's shame, some kind of collaboration of those things. And I think it did all of us a lot of harm that we weren't able to allow that secret to really stop being a secret anymore.
Well, let's read our letter.
Let's do it.
Dear Sugars, 2.5 years ago, I caught my father having an affair with a woman who has been a family friend and an employee of his for nearly 15 years. It shattered my world. My dad is a wonderful father. He's someone that everyone respects and thinks highly of. I aspired to have a marriage like my parents my whole life. How could a man who'd hung the moon in my eyes for 28 years be such a deceitful husband? My parents had been married 34 years when he began the affair. I have forgiven him, although it still hurts, and I bear the burden of keeping the secret from my mother. Here is where my real hurt begins. I'm married to a wonderful and kind man. Everyone has always said he's so much like my dad. We dated for 3 years before we got married, and soon it will be our 5-year anniversary. I knew when I married him that he would be an honest and faithful husband. I trusted him with my whole heart. But 4 months after discovering my dad's affair, I found out, in a very harsh way, that my husband was addicted to pain pills and had been for over a year. I was shocked. This man, who was the most honest, considerate, hardworking, and dedicated person I'd ever met, had been deceiving me for over a year. It felt like finding out about my dad's affair all over again. To make matters worse, his mother was providing him with the pills when he couldn't get them on his own. So I had to face that my mother-in-law had lied to me and betrayed me as well. It felt like everyone who was supposed to love me was a totally different person than I believed him or her to be. I was crushed, but determined to stick it out with him. He relapsed several times over the course of a year, stealing pills from family members, lying, getting more pills from his mother. And each time, my trust in him diminished more and more. He finally got into a program, and he's been clean for 16 months. I'm so proud of him and the huge strides he's taken to get to this place in his sobriety. We're truly happy in our marriage now, and I love him with all of my being. But I still struggle with trusting him. I find myself sometimes thinking that if he can deceive me so easily with his addiction, what will stop him from deceiving me with infidelity? I know it isn't fair to compare him to my father. He's working hard in his recovery. But Sugars, how do I recover from the lies and heartbreak? How do I stop fearing all the ways my husband could betray me 30 years down the road? Signed, Fearful but Hopeful.
Oof, yeah. You know, this is a letter where you can see that one secret, you know, kind of in her mind in a way begets another. There's an idealized father figure and, you know, he falls from grace. And then there's a husband who, in a way, sort of psychologically, everybody loves and respects and thinks the world of, like Dad. And she's thinking, I married a guy like Dad, solid, stable, won't betray me. And what she realizes is, nope, it's a pattern. Those two events are actually separate. You know, they're their own individuals making their own mistakes and suddenly having them discovered. But in your mind, I think psychologically, they feel like something that means that you can't believe these idealized figures. So one of the things you got to do is realize they're human and they made mistakes. And, you know, it's always dangerous when we idealize people. They can do nothing but disappoint us and betray our expectations of them. What's toughest for you, Fearful but Hopeful, is that you have this sense that your husband could betray you and that that is lying in wait, that the pattern will inevitably repeat itself. And we can't say that that won't happen, but we can say that, you know, you have to, especially when your husband is in recovery, you have to live kind of one day and one week at a time. It's unrealistic in the way that it's idealizing a figure and saying there's no way they could fall from grace. They're too solid. Everybody loves and respects them. You also can't do that in a chronological way to say, well, I know this person's so solid that they would never have a fall from grace. They would never make a mistake. They would never keep a secret from me. We can never say that. I can't say that about myself. You can't say that about yourself or Brian or Aaron or, you know, right? Any of the other people who we feel like kind of the way we move through life is with this assumption of like, they're solid, they're solid. And the truth is, everybody can fall.
Yeah. I feel for you, Fearful but Hopeful. And I have been where you are I have been betrayed by people I love. And I have thought, how will I ever get over this heartbreak? Because what I want is what you want. And what everyone wants is for everyone to make good on the promises they've made us. And we want to believe that the people around us, whether they be parents or friends, if they're coupled up, that they're just going to stay coupled up and they're going to be nice to each other and nobody's going to lie to each other. And the people we're coupled up with are going to
right.
tell us the truth all the time and not keep secrets from us. And honestly, I think about this a lot. I think about this a lot. And it's something I've thought about, not just in my own personal life, but because of this role I've inhabited as Sugar. I'm the recipient of so many letters when I was writing the column. And now here on the show, on the podcast, you know, we are constantly barraged with people's secrets. And what we learn is a lot of people who said they would be this way end up being that way. And what I've come to is that it's part of life. And even though we want to think that, you know, we're going to ever have a partner who can promise us, I will never deceive you in the 30 years to come, we don't get to have that.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean that that won't happen. Like, you might, fearful but hopeful, have a spouse who never lies to you again in the next 30 years. I'm not such a pessimist that I don't think that that's possible. I actually think it's very possible. And
right.
I think a lot of people have very transparent lives and they really do tell the truth and they don't have secrets and deceit. But what I also know is that that's not a majority of the people, that most people over time are going to stumble, have a secret, have an addiction, have an affair, and not
have a relapse.
Yeah, have, you know, whatever it is, and mm-hmm. not tell the truth. And so, you know, it's almost like the way, you know, you think about any kind of, you know, running any kind of risk. I mean, let us think about, you know, how dangerous it is to get in an automobile. You know, certain number of people are injured in automobile accidents. It doesn't prevent us from driving cars, right? And so I think that this is the way we have to think about our relationships, too.
Yeah.
You might get hurt. You can't protect yourself from that kind of hurt. The only thing you can do is say, it really matters to me that I live with integrity and that the people I love try as hard as they can to tell me as much of the truth about themselves as possible.
Bingo.
And part of doing that is also being open to hearing the truth.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that has happened in my own marriage is, you know, there have been a couple of times that Brian and I have had to tell each other really hard things. We've had to tell each other things that will deeply and profoundly disappoint the other person. And one of the greatest things that we've built over time in our relationship is that sense of safety that, you know, I can say to Brian, I can't promise that I'm not going to be furious with you when you tell me that truth that's going to disappoint me. But I can tell you that I'll be able to hear it and still love you and to try to work with you through that truth. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's very different than saying, don't you dare ever deceive me. Don't you dare ever cheat on me. Don't you dare ever lie to me.
Right.
Okay? So if you're brave enough to kind of open that door, what you get is a more honest relationship. And that sometimes hurts.
Right. It does.
But it hurts less than those deceitful ones where
right.
you're shocked and blindsided.
Yeah.
Because
and
you thought you were married to somebody that was really a facade of
right.
you know, who you thought they were.
Or an idealized version. The other thing to think about here, fearful but hopeful, and it was really triggered by what you were saying, Cheryl, about insisting on living with integrity and the person you're with being transparent with you. And I don't want to harp on this because I know that fearful but hopeful, you're in a real dilemma. The same one, in fact, that Lost Somewhere in California is in, whose letter we talked about last week. You bear the burden, as you say, of keeping this secret from your mother. So in a certain way, you are not being transparent yourself
yeah,
because
you right.
know that your father is betraying your mother and you have not told her that. And I'm not saying that as a criticism. I'm just observing it so that you realize that part of what might be agitating you is that his secret has now become a secret that you have to guard. And like I said, those secrets, stony in our hearts, have a way of wanting to reveal themselves, even though when they get dethroned, they destabilize things. And that might be part of what is agitating you here, is that your father, rather than coming clean with you and everyone and suffering the consequences of his not being the idealized figure that you or his wife thought he was, and maybe the rest of the community, you are protecting him and that false idealized version of him. And that's actually, you're right to say you're bearing a burden because you are bearing his burden.
Yeah. I think that that's really wise counsel, Steve. I mean, you give it all the time, but this piece of the letter, it's kind of delivered as like a side note, like, oh, right. I know this terrible thing about my dad, and now I've had to keep this secret. And then she goes into much more detail about her own betrayal, you know, with her husband having this addiction that he kept from her. But I do think you've tapped into something here to say, okay, you want others to be honest with you, fearful but hopeful, but you are complicit with a lie. And it's not your fault. It's really not your fault. And there are big consequences if you go to your father and say, I'm not going to keep your lie anymore. So you need to go tell mom about this.
I'm not
going to
keep your secret.
You know,
yeah.
I'm not going to keep your secret. But I do think that there's liberation and, you know, at least, you know, you can work on yourself. You can't make your father be an honest person. You can't make your husband be an honest person. But you can live as an honest person yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that first person you need to work on is like really unburdening yourself of any of those secrets that you're keeping. And it might have an, I mean, I think it will have a really interesting way, as you suggest, Steve, of, you know, lifting some of this anxiety about living a life of deceit.
Right, because here's what I think is happening. The original sort of stand-up dude in your eyes is your dad. And you realize that not only is he not that person, but he doesn't have the integrity to come clean to everybody and admit, I've fallen, okay?
Even after you caught him in his lie.
Correct. And maybe something you need to realize, fearful but hopeful, is it's your husband who's the guy who has more integrity. Because I'm not saying, you know, wow, lucky you, he's a drug addict, but he's faced it. He's dealing with it. He's doing the hard day-to-day work of admitting that he had this problem and he needs to every day try to live with integrity and not relapse and not, you know, fall back into this addiction. But what you're doing with your dad is really protecting a false image of who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's the one in the end who's, to me, to my way of thinking, more disappointing. And I think maybe you might be disappointed in yourself because you've sort of thrown in your lot and are protecting somebody who isn't necessarily deserving of your protection.
Yeah. You know, I will say in defense of your dad, you know what I think is really terrible? Fearful but helpful. I think it's really terrible that your father allowed you to carry this secret. Like, I don't think it's great he had this affair, but it's not surprising he had an affair. He's been married to your mom for 34 years. Things like this happen.
Yeah, we know that from our inbox. We're talking here about, you know, the segment is really about secrets that are revealed. But what we're trying to point out here, fearful but hopeful, is this is a secret that you've discovered and then you've been asked to hold and then to perpetrate. I agree that in a way, that's the problem. That doesn't mean you have to tell your mom, but it's another thing that you have to reckon with. It's not just that your dad had an affair and shattered your image of him being perfect. He's a flawed guy. And there's a lot that he did right and is doing right in his life. I think the real thing that makes it relevant for this episode is you discovered this secret and you're now the bearer of it. You are having to hold it.
Okay, we're going to call Carrie Brownstein, who is, she's so many things and she's so awesome, right? She's
yeah, really, it would be truly easier to list the things that she isn't than the things that she is.
Right. She's a musician. She's an actress currently in Transparent. And of course, you know, I have to say, here we are in Portland. She's, you know, the genius behind Portlandia. And she's written the recent memoir, Hunger Makes Me a Modern Girl. It's a great book. And it's about many things. But one of the things it's about is family secrets, a secret that was revealed to her, a couple of secrets, really. So let's give her a call. I think that she's going to be really insightful on this very question that we're
meditating on. Yeah, her dad had a big secret, just like fearful but hopeful. So
yeah, let's give her a call.
Hello?
Carrie?
Hi.
Hi, this is Cheryl Strayed.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you? I have Steve Almond on the line with me as well.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Steve.
So, listen, we are talking today about family secrets, and we thought that, you know, you would be a great person for us to chat with about this because so much of, you know, what you've been through and what you've written about in your memoir has to do with a big secret, really, that was revealed to you in your life. And I'm wondering if you can sort of back up and tell us your story.
Sure. So when I was in my mid-20s, my father, who had been a corporate lawyer when I was growing up in the suburbs of Seattle, soccer coach, Republican voter, a little bit, I guess, diffident and, you know, not a very emotional guy, kind of a classic 1980s dad, almost sort of an archetype, bordering on a cliche of a dad. And when I was in my 20s, he came out as gay. And it was very surprising for myself and my sister, because even after he and my mother divorced, which was when I was an early teenager, he continued to date women after that. So it was very mysterious.
Right. Do you think it was like a secret he kept from himself?
I think in some ways, I think perhaps that has to do with his generation. He was in his 50s, and I think at the time, you know, it didn't really make sense for him. He was in an environment where there were not a lot of openly gay men or women. I think he was very much conditioned into a heteronormative society, and I don't think that ever came into his consciousness as an option. And if he had any repressed longings, you know, they never really surfaced in a way that he let himself realize or act upon. So, yeah, you know, I think it was something like a tiny little secret, like a little, you know, sphere of light that he held kind of very, very buried inside of him that eventually he was able to access. But it took a long time, and I think it did feel like a secret that he held on to that he was scared to uncover.
Mm-hmm. How did you react, you and your sister, when you learned this?
We both were supportive of him. I mean, it wasn't uncommon in our like friend group. It was pretty normalized, but it was definitely strange, I think, because it did kind of reconfigure our sense of who our father was. And you then go back and think, okay, well, if you're a different person now, then who were you when we were growing up?
Right.
In retrospect, and I read about this in my book, I could kind of go back and revise certain situations and realize that they sort of lit a path to this conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very jarring kind of realization to have. It's a little unsettling. And it's a part of your life that you kind of take for granted is sort of ossified at that point, and then it starts to feel like it's cracking.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Carrie, you had a chance to read the letter from Fearful But Hopeful?
Yes.
Very different circumstances, but the connection that I was drawing in my head when you were talking about your experience is that she had a certain image, a really idealized image of her dad that suddenly gets, you know, really turned over when she realizes that he's not who she thought he was. She's kind of still trying to revise the record.
Yeah. I think that, you know, with an affair, there are similarities, you know, in just as you're saying that, and she describes in the letter that it's this shattering process. You know, it kind of dismantles your idea of who someone is and where they fit categorically kind of in your mind. And I think it requires a lot of self-examination. I think sometimes even you just resent that you have to do it. You're like, come on. You know, I've had my own stuff to deal with, and now I have to go back and, you know, reassess, you know, who you were. And, yeah, it feels like a betrayal in some ways because, you know, we think of our lives in this linear way, and they're not. You know, you always are circling back to the past.
Right.
Yeah. And also, I think all of us, no matter how much our generation, really, we're all like, everything's so complicated and people are flawed and people are complex. And yet I think there's this little girl that lives inside of me that basically wants to believe that everyone is good and exactly as they present themselves
right.
to be and telling the truth. And, you know, even a lie, like an innocent lie, you know, where your father's like, look, you know, I didn't know I was gay, and now I know I'm gay, and so I'm going to tell you I'm gay, you know, that still probably can feel like that ground is shifting beneath you, right? Because you want your dad to be like the one thing you know. And then when you have to revise that radically,
right.
It's a big deal.
You slotted him to like diffident corporate lawyer Republican, and suddenly there's this whole, yeah, that's not fitting in.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is about having, you know, somebody take up, I mean, especially parents, they take up almost a monolithic space. And yeah, you kind of want to encase that in glass and just move on from it. And then it disturbs, I think, that sense of order. For me, you know, I think kids want to be the ones that are like transgressive and
right.
rebellious,
right.
and the parents possess the steadiness. Of course, the reality is so many of us have parents that displayed a lot of unsteadiness due to, you know, either outside circumstances or something more internal. But I do think there is almost this naive hope because we've been fed so many examples of normalcy and convention that it always seems like a disappointment, even if you see it coming.
Yeah. It's interesting. Did you ever ask your father, or do you have a sense of why he decided to tell you when he did?
Well, I think he was ready, and I am very proud of him in the sense that, you know, I think it is very difficult to live a life that is hidden and marginalized and secret. I think that takes a lot of effort.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't too long after that he shared with us. And then eventually, and this is, I think, what I'm sort of most proud of, is even the people that he had worked with and, you know, an environment that seems slightly more conservative, he went back and, you know, ended up coming out to everyone he at his office and pretty much everyone in his life, which I think really expanded his sort of emotional capabilities. I mean, I think to live more fully and dynamically, you just have access to so much more of yourself. And thus, me as his daughter has, you know, I have more access to him. And I'm kind of curious, though, with the letter that I read, like, I think that is kind of the silver lining. It's like, even though it's darker and thornier and more complicated, you are really actually opening up more space with someone.
Right.
Indeed.
You know, it's like the truth kind of does carve out an openness that you weren't able to access.
Mm-hmm. The thing that impressed me, Carrie, about your father's decision to come out and really puts him in a certain way, kind of in a counterpoint to what fearful but hopeful a letter writer is dealing with, is he came out to you and to the people in his work and so forth, but also to his mother. I mean, the family culture that you describe that he grew up in is one of, like, don't say it if it doesn't need to be said. So that, to me, was the thing that felt pretty amazing and heroic, because the response that she gives him is pretty much your worst nightmare.
Yeah, she said, you know, you waited for your father to die. Why couldn't you wait for me to die? And, you know, now that I think about it, I do realize that I think part of my father's own sort of delay in his journey was, I think, waiting for his dad to pass away and coming to terms with their relationship. And I think it allowed him to, you know, explore and figure out who he was, not in relation to a fairly strict father. But yeah, I was really proud of him for coming out to his mom. And my grandmother ended up meeting my dad's then partner, now husband, and, you know, liking him, which is often what happens in these kinds of situations, is when you make something personal, all of a sudden it feels like you can accept it. It's not an abstract concept. It's you know, two human beings.
Yeah.
I'm curious, Carrie, if you can talk a little bit about the extent to which, or whether at all, your father's decision to come out to you affected how you've dealt with your identity and, you know, as you've moved forward in the world. Is there any relationship, do you think, did it make an impact at all in how you thought about your own romantic life and identity?
Yeah, I mean, I identify as queer and had come out, you know, sort of before my dad had. And, you know, I write about in my memoir how, again, because you kind of want your parents to be the quote unquote normal ones, I was just like, forget it. I'm going to marry a man and have five kids. Like, my dad can just be he can be the gay one in the family.
Right.
So yeah, you're just naturally really reactionary, I think, when your parents, like, you know, if you're mom or dad went out and got like their ear pierced, or you would like immediately like unpierce any part of your body.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like, if your dad got a tattoo, you'd be like, I'm taking my tattoos off. Like you just, you know, we just have these really, I mean, I guess they're unfair, but they are these expectations we have on our parents. And, so I think one thing I did learn, because I think in the context of making music and putting creative content out into the world, you know, whether it's, you know, writing or music or whatever, I think, you know, you try to sort of transcend or get away from these labels that are put on you. And I think that was the only issue I ever had with like a queer identity is, you know, people already get these indexers and identifiers in front of, you know, writer, like female writer, queer writer. And sometimes you just want to say like, yeah, I'm just a writer. So I think that was my own struggle with, with sexual identity. And I think with my dad, I really wanted to work towards just not letting anyone feel hidden. That just hurts everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Our producer is holding up this note saying, "A Family Secrets on Transparent," which I was literally thinking about, Carrie, as you were talking, because my wife and I, like, we just love that program. And part of the reason is because that show is really so much about the kind of the cauldron of family secrets and the way in which there's, you know, on all these different levels. And even as we're watching the program sort of back through the generations, you can see the writers and creators of that show saying, well, this isn't just something that's, you know, happening in the present. There is a culture of secrets and secrecy, partly based on social norms and expectations and bigotries that extends backwards in the history of this particular family. Is that something, I mean, obviously, you're not Jill Soloway, so we're not going to expect you to, you know, talk about the genesis of the show, but you must be cognizant of the fact that that program is resonating with people because it is so deeply about family secrets and which ones are revealed and which ones are guarded.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, above and beyond it being, you know, this really radical show and really kind of engaging the culture in a dialogue about gender and, you know, and sexuality. And it really is a relatable story about a dysfunctional family and, you know, the way that their flaws and their complexities like play off each other. And yeah, and how these things that they've, you know, kept secret and kept to themselves, whether it's, well, I guess I don't want to give any spoilers away, but yeah, that they start to unravel. And it's so interesting how, like, secrets do not exist in a vacuum. Like, sort of, one, I think that's part of the reason that people hold on to them and decide not to tell or to reveal is because you're aware of that kind of domino effect. And it's true that they really permeate everyone around you, especially with family. You know, no one is untouched by the revelation and by the truth. But it is, I think, about just recalibrating what closeness means, like what knowing someone means, you know, what family is. And I think family is, and relationships are, that journey. Like, it's not static. It's not truth or untruth. It's a dialogue between both those things. And, I mean, to be part of a family is to be in a constant dialogue about, you know, who and what we are and who and what we were and who and what we could be.
Mm. Beautifully put. Beautifully put. Carrie, thank you so much for talking to us. You know, I'm such a fan of yours. I hope our paths cross in real life.
I would love that too. And thank you so much for having me on your excellent show.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. All right, take care. We'll see
care,
you on
okay.
TV. All right.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
You know, one thing I loved that Carrie was saying is just this basic idea that kids rebel against their parents' identity. And, you know, it's sort of so right in front of our faces that, you know, you kind of realize, oh. And what I was realizing is fearful but hopeful in a weird way, that's what she's got to do.
Yeah.
She's got to rebel against her father. certainly rebelling against the notion that he's this idealized figure who has to be perfect in order to be all the good things he was. No, that's not true. You have to rebel against that myth. But more fundamentally, rebel against the culture of secrecy that he wants to enlist you in. He's not strong enough to say to his, you know, wife and maybe to the rest of the people who hold him in this kind of esteem, I made a mistake, I fell from grace. But I think your husband is, even though that's a more perilous path, as Cheryl said, it's really tough to realize that we are all just one misstep away, one revealed secret about ourselves away from disappointing people who love us
yeah.
and causing them to have to reevaluate who we are and they are.
Yeah. And I think she also needs to rebel against the idea that we are static, that trust is something that you can buy and then like it's good for 30 years.
Right.
Because it isn't. Trust, you know, you ask us, fearful but hopeful, how do I regain the trust? It's every day. It's every day that you see your husband telling you the truth. It's every day when you live the truth in your own life. And it's every day that you're willing to see the things that you don't want to see, the things that are hard or contradictory or counter to what you hope for. And, you know, so I think that I love that way that Carrie put it. It's not, we aren't static. It is a journey.
Mm-hmm.
And that embracing that more complicated vision of who we are is the deepest way to true wholeness and integrity in our lives.
It's interesting, Cheryl, as we've done these two episodes, I just have realized that there is a lot that I am still complicit in terms of not talking with my brother. I think, in other words, I've kind of consented, and maybe together we have consented to not truly knowing one another as deeply as we could. And in a weird way, I want to say, like, I'm going to try to remedy that and sort of break the veil of silence, because we sort of agreed to not talk about certain things, and a lot of his life is really private. And it might be that he wants to keep it that way, but I've got a few things I want to say and a few things I want to hear, and I want us to start to speak about that more openly. Because I feel like, you know, family secrets, you can say, well, you know, sort of once it's been said, it's out there. It's like, nope. And to really live, in a sense, as Carrie was talking about, truly knowing who you are and who the people around you are means you're discovering something new and potentially unsettling. And that's the only way to be truthful as you try to conduct your relationship with them. So I've got some work to do.
I know you can do that, Stephen. I know that all of our listeners and secret keepers and secret givers and
which is all of our listeners.
Sellers, right. I know you can all do it. I mean, that's it. It's all, we're all, you know, walking in that direction toward the light. And if we don't walk there, we're going to be dragged there. So What my advice is go. Dear Sugar Radio is produced by WBUR. We are produced and edited by Lisa Tobin. We're recording today at Talkback Sound and Visual in Portland, Oregon, where I might add Portlandia is made. Josh Millman is our engineer, and our theme music is by the Portland musicians Wonderly. Please listen and subscribe to us on iTunes and write to us at DearSugarRadio@gmail.com.
We await your secrets.